Hello, I'm Rachel Richards, former BBC correspondent, parenting coach, mother of two teenagers and two older stepdaughters.
Hello, I'm Susie Asley, mindfulness instructor and psychotherapist and mother of three teenagers. Two of them are twins.
Susie, today it's quite echoey because we've moved into yet another room to get away from the dogs and the children. So if it sounds a bit different, that's because we're in a bigger room.
We're not in the bathroom.
Yeah, we're not in an auditorium. Anyway, so last episode we talked about how teenagers can feel that their siblings have it better than them. And my daughter pointed out that I'd miss one of the things that she likes the most. I've always said to them, look, it's not about the age. They'll say, oh, what age do I have to be to have this? And I say, that's not the point. The point is, are you mature enough? Are you ready for that freedom? And that will come at a different age. So I've said to them, I'm always happy to give you as much freedom as possible. So I'm looking to give you freedom. If I think you're ready, I'll let you do that thing. So whether it's going shopping on your own or public transport, if I think there's a problem and you're struggling with it, then obviously I'm going to rein in that freedom. And that there's not a cliff that you fall off and then you're now able to always do this forever. It's about, you know, I will always be there to check, to make sure that you're coping.
Yeah, I love that. It's needs based then, isn't it? Rather than automatic, you get this at this certain age. It's what do they need at that moment?
It's exactly what you were talking about last time, actually.
And I love that your daughter listened to the podcast and has also given you feedback.
I think she's just checking to make sure I put the things in that she likes.
Yeah, great. Brilliant.
Now, Natalie, who has a blended family, messaged us to say that she really liked the episode on sibling rivalry, particularly the safe word.
Yes.
Susie, what do you think is our most popular episode?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe the one about anxiety.
Yes, setting rules, anxiety and setting rules that they'll follow. This is obviously, it's been a rising problem and it's clearly something that parents need some guidance with. So yeah. I'm really glad that that's helping people. Well, I hope it is. I hope they're not just downloading it and going, well, that was rubbish. That was rubbish.
That's possible.
Yeah. Another one that's very popular is to motivate your teenager who isn't very academic. There was one other, but we'll mention that later. Okay. Is there anything that's actually really changed things for you? Please let us know, because it will help other parents if we can flag it up and say this specific thing is a game changer.
And things that other people find helpful, it's good for us to know.
Yeah, it really helps. So just message us at help@teenagersuntangled.com or, you know, Facebook, Instagram, whatever your preferred means of contacting us. Now, later in this episode, we'll look at what to do when you don't like your teenager's friends. But first, we've been asked by Claire to look at mum guilt. Now, it's a short phrase, but it's a big thing. What do we mean by mum guilt? It's that feeling you're not quite up to scratch and you're letting people down. And mums have to play so many roles: cooking, cleaning, organising, checking on homework, managing lots of diaries, being the emotional problem solver, and being feminine and beautiful. Now, unless a job is clearly allocated, it tends to be assumed that it's the mother's. So it becomes impossible to do anything quite as well as you'd like to.
I've been thinking about it and asking friends and my partner today as well about it. And it's kind of blown my mind a bit. When I asked my my partner, who is really hands-on dad, he's an amazing dad, he was like, oh, I don't know what that is. I called it parenting guilt, you know, mum guilt, parenting guilt. You know, we're talking about that today. What do you think about it, kind of thing? And he just looked blankly at me. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's, you know, really hands-on dad. I was like,
I am surprised.
It's blown my mind. And it's blown his mind too.
That's such an interesting one, because it reflects everything that I've seen too. Mm. And the two things I'd like to bring up are one, which is Helena Morrissey's book, Good Time to Be a Girl. Mm. And she edited a very well-known news program in the UK and asked all the CEOs, and there were several male CEOs who came on the program. Each of them was asked, how do you deal with work-life balance? How are you coping with having a family and, you know, your work? And they all just looked blankly at her and said, well, I don't know. And she said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, I've never been asked that question. Which is really, it's so disappointing, and it's actually really important. Yeah. And she said the upsetting thing was that none of them mentioned their wives who were managing all this enormous burden and the stress involved with doing the other thing.
Yeah.
They were just proudly talking about the things that they were managing, which is great. But let's be a bit more honest about what's really going on here and how they're managing to have a family. And the other thing that struck me this week was that I was reading the BBC website, as I do, but as a former BBC journalist, and there was a sports section, and there was a little article that was talking about the trials of being a professional footballer and a parent. Guess who they were talking about? It was a female professional footballer, and they had a photo of her holding her baby. And it really upset me, because I just thought, well, hang on a second. I guarantee I've never read an article about how a male professional footballer copes with having a young child.
Yeah, and it's not the point that we shouldn't talk about the mother doing it. It's that it needs to be equal.
Yeah, well, the point is, you know, she's good at her job.
Yeah.
Why are we now bringing the parenting in? Or should we just, so I actually wrote to the BBC and said, could you please, you know, do an article for me about how the men cope with this?
Yeah.
Because surely it's important, right?
It's really.
So I think that highlights the fact that this actually, I'll put my head on the block and say it's actually mum guilt. I said parent guilt last week, thinking, oh, you know, we don't want to miss people. But the truth is, it's with the women who are bearing the majority of this.
Yeah, and I really didn't realise. I was thinking, you know, mum guilt, we'll talk about, you know, ways to tackle it, what to do from a, you know, that kind of perspective. But actually, it's maybe more interesting is that it only exists for women. Like, that's a massive generalisation. I'm sure that, you know, it'd be really interesting actually to hear if there are some dads out there that
love to hear from you. Seriously, that would be very, very helpful, because we're not seeing it.
No, and it seems to be that the bar is set very differently for men, you know, anything that they do with kids, and that this is also a massive generalisation. But talking to, you know, single dads as well, you know, that anything they do is amazing. It's almost slightly patronizing, you know, well done for, you know, taking your child to the doctor. That's amazing. Whereas, you know, for women, it's a neglect if you don't, you know, the bar is so different still.
And there's a motherhood myth. There's this sense that women are supposed to be naturally constantly loving, never being angry, being ever attentive. You know, this is your role. Mm. So you should slip nicely into it and you should be able to do it well.
Yes.
And there's never this sense that it's going to be extremely challenging because we're making compromises.
Yeah. The problem is it's just the women, I think.
It's just the women talking about.
Which has blown my mind.
Yeah, I think it is just the women. I don't think my husband's had any conversations with his friends about how they're coping with their parenting.
No, and also differences between, I was talking to a couple of mum friends as well, of it's, I've been a single parent since mine were tiny. And I think that is also different, you know, the guilt that I felt and still feel, but I'm much more aware of it, was very tangible. You know, like I only have two hands, I only have two legs, you know, when they were little. I've had this sort of background noise the whole time. I'm not enough. And with that guilt, and then you can build up an awareness of that and tackle with it. But that still exists, you know, when they're teenagers too.
And I think it's corrosive, and it ends up with the mother trying to do too much and then losing herself. And I see a lot when it comes to the teenagers, a lot of mothers saying, they're so invested in their children because they're being forced down this sort of funnel for so long that they then have no idea how to extricate themselves and to cope when the children, your teenagers, are starting to push back and they're, you know, they're founding their own lives and they'll be trying to create their own boundaries and they feel rejected.
Yeah.
And yet again, what am I doing wrong?
Yes.
Well, you're not doing it. It's not you.
No.
It's that your teenager's trying to, you know, trying out being an adult on their own.
Yeah, and psychologically, we know so much more about that, and we're interested, you know, which is amazing and brilliant. But, you know, we're told all the time that, you know, as parents, what we do is really, really important and can really change the course of our children's lives as, you know, go into adulthood. It's really important what we do. Ergo, on the flip side, if we don't do it or we do it badly, that we are ruining them somehow, or, you know, and there is an element of truth in that. You know, of course, what we do makes a huge impact, and it's not our complete responsibility. And that's where the guilt comes in. And that's hard to get away from.
Sure. So coming back to guilt, Brené Brown, you mentioned her for this definition. points out, I mean, she's a shame and empathy researcher and just incredible on these subjects, but she says there's a difference between shame and guilt. So shame means I am bad. Guilt means I've done something bad. Mm. So these are, the mum guilt is to do with having done something or missing doing something that it's not who you are. It's what you're doing wrong.
Yeah, I do think though it flips over into it, and I think we call it mum guilt, but I think it's also mum shame.
Mum shame.
But it's really important to know the difference, because shame is your whole being. I am fundamentally wrong, and guilt is I have done something wrong.
Mm. And guilt rarely happens in isolation. It's something that happens between people. A research team led by Roy Burmeister, who's a PhD, found that guilt actually strengthens social bonds and attachment. So it's something that we're doing as a community to ourselves. You sort of live in a community, and in a way, there's a positive use of guilt because it sort of maintains connection to that group. Guilt is our conscience talking. So it's a signal to take a look at our part in our relationship with our teenager, and, you know, have we done what we should be doing? Mm.
Yeah, I guess the problem is when we get stuck in it, isn't it? If we get stuck in guilt, and then it turns into something more toxic.
Yes, and it
can be a recognition that something is out of balance, or we've done something that we shouldn't have done, an apology, and then move on.
Yes, and but it can also be a motivator to do something. So you go, okay, it's a motivator if we identify it and say, okay, I'm feeling guilty. What do I need to be doing? How can I change what's happening?
Yes.
And when it's not overdone, showing our guilt to our teenager and saying, oh, I actually feel like I've really not quite lived up to this, can make them feel better about your relationship.
Yes,
and they feel that you're not doing it through simply not caring. It's that, you know, you're a fallible person yourself, and it makes them feel okay about being fallible, because we're all fallible,
and teaches them how to apologize, etc. I think the classic one for, you know, that kind of thing is when we shout at our kids, which everybody does. And that's a massive mum guilt flag, isn't it? We don't want to, it doesn't feel
women
very nice.
Aren't supposed to shout.
Yeah, women for starters aren't supposed to shout, and we're definitely not supposed to shout at our kids, and it doesn't feel very nice either. Mm-hmm. But it of course happens, you know, we're human. But the difference between the guilt and the shame, you know, the guilt, I've shouted, that didn't feel nice. What can I do next time to put steps in place so that I maybe don't shout, or whatever steps you want to take? And shame would be, I've shouted at my kids, so I'm bad.
I'm a bad person.
I'm feeling awful for ages, you know, really kind of shriveling.
Which is not helping anybody.
No.
Literally nobody is going to benefit from
that. But if we're not aware of the difference, then it's difficult.
A really great distinction to make. And I think the negative uses of guilt that I discovered as, you know, criteria, it sort of can let you off the hook from making changes. So if you actually sit in the guilt and you think, oh, you feel bad enough about things, then it's sort of, you feel like you're doing something, but you're not.
Kind of victim mentality.
Yes. It can be a way to punish ourselves. So, you know, if we see ourselves as having been a terrible mother, we can at least have the decency to feel bad about it. Right?
That's
Come
so
on,
funny.
Beat yourself up.
Yeah. That's so true.
And it can be a poor substitute for feelings of self-worth.
Yes.
You know, if you feel good about yourself, you're not going to feel guilty for long. What you're going to do is act on it. You're going to say, oh, I feel like I should have done this. It's a little signal.
Yes.
And it is a little, it should be a little signal. I think what's happening with this motherhood myth is we end up, I mean, you think about the things that women are responsible for as mothers. So, you know, we're in a society now where a lot of people can't afford for one person to stay at home.
No.
So you'll have working mothers. You have the mothers who are the stay-at-home mothers who feel guilty about not working. You have the working mothers who feel guilty about working.
Yes.
You have the mothers who should have cooked a home-cooked meal, but they didn't have time today because they were carting people around. Mm. But by the way, they couldn't get to all the different functions. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you name it.
Constant.
And then there's the, I'm going to go to bed really late because it's the only way I get that little bit of time to myself. And then actually, you know, I'm going to read the book, and then you feel guilty because you really should be getting a bit more sleep because you're going to be angry tomorrow because you're whatever.
Yeah, it's constant.
Yeah. And so we are not helping ourselves if we're suffering this way.
Mm.
So it's more that we've got to start looking at what's going on here and how do we help fix this. So tips. So Suarez Angelou, who's the she's a social worker who looked into this, practicing self-compassion. This is a wonderful one that you're so good at.
Yeah, I mean, self-compassion is a sort of branch of mindfulness. There is self-compassion within mindfulness, but there's also a big movement. Kristen Neff is amazing with the self-compassion element. And there are three parts to self-compassion, and practicing self-compassion can be an absolute game changer. And it's, you know, kindness to yourself, kindness, and then a recognition that we are human beings. You know, it's common humanity. It's you're not the only mother feeling this. There are others out there, which can be such a relief. And then mindfulness, awareness, you know, basic awareness of what's going on, so that, you know, for example, just even recognizing that we feel guilt is step one.
Absolutely.
Or recognizing any, or you get that little icky feeling. I always call it like an icky feeling of what, something's off balance, something's out of balance. And if we don't recognize any of that, we're not aware, we're not tuned in, then we're just going in autopilot and
I love
doing
that,
the same as saying.
I love that point you made about all the mothers feeling this, because actually there's a lady called Lauren Smith Brody who wrote a piece called The Fifth Trimester. And ooh, it was and it's basically the kind of, you know, for example, working mums. She did interviews, 100 in-depth interviews and a survey of 700 working mums. And her point was they all feel mum guilt. So what she was saying was that she started to realise that if everybody feels like they're not really succeeding at this, then it's false.
Yes.
Because somehow you're measuring yourself against something that's impossible.
Yes. I think that's so interesting, because it's so true. And also the thing that's blown my mind by talking to people who, you know, maybe men that don't feel it, is then, well, it's not a conscious choice, but it's if there are people who are parenting and, you know, parenting on their own as well, not feeling it, then we don't have to feel it.
Very true.
You know, awareness, you know.
Very true.
So on the one side, we've got all mums feeling it, so therefore it can't be true.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other people, you know, half the population
who are feeling it.
Then it's not a necessity. So how can we step out of it? What can we do to not feel it? Because it's not helpful.
Yes, and staying on the question about, you know, the working environment, it actually made me stop and think, having read what she'd said, that, you know, when I was working, I'd be given a contract, I'd be given the hours, I'd be given the pay, and I would be reviewed regularly. And, you know, there have been lots of jokes about this, you know, where you apply for the parenting job and actually who's going to take it.
Yeah.
And it's actually really, really important, because the difficulty is, particularly with a mum guilt, there is no proper evaluation of how am I doing in my job? You know, and this is actually something people really feel that they need. Now, if you're not going to get that from someone else, you need to do it for yourself. You need to give yourself a break and say, actually, it's not that bad.
No, an internal validation is always better than external anyway, because then you're not relying on other people. And I think the problem can also be that because we don't get the validation that we need often, because it's culturally not a thing that we think of. We always think that we're sort of in deficit somehow, that we're not measuring up to this stupid standard we've set, we then put it onto our kids. So then they become the measure for our success.
Yes, what a great point.
So we're like, well, our kids have done, you know, the shit hit the fan for our kids somehow. And can I say that?
Yes, you can say that. You can say that. I'm sure a lot of it's in a lot of fans.
Certainly in my house. You know, stuff happens to all of us. And then, you know, then I must be a bad parent. Mm. Or on the other way, my kid is amazing, you know, doing really well in school or doing really well in something. Ergo, I am a great parent.
This fantastic parent.
And that is not the case.
And actually, that's such a great point, because I see a lot of groups, particularly online, where people come in asking for help. And the response can vary from parents thinking that they're just an idiot for not being able to get this right, to other parents going, oh, I'm completely lost myself. I have no idea where I am. Yes. The real point is, she needs some support.
Yes.
You know, this is not what you, as soon as we start judging, what we're doing is we're not really helping. Yeah. So actually, when you're with other mothers, for example, we need to recognize that this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to think, am I adding to mum guilt by saying this thing? And can I, and, you know, genuinely practicing compassion for other people in the community.
Common humanity.
And we're not saying don't flag up things that obviously are important, but it's the way you deliver the information and the way that you support someone who's struggling and you say, oh, well, I had that problem, or I've seen people do this and maybe this would help you.
It's such a relief when you talk to somebody who says, I get you, I understand.
Yes. Put down the wagging finger.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be there because they have their own peanut gallery going on and we don't need to add more peanuts to the stuff that's being thrown at their stage.
And the other problem with them putting the validation on how your child is performing, if you want to call it that, is then your child becomes the yardstick, and that's super toxic for the kid.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's really common, I think, you know.
I think that's really a really good point. I mean, communicate and ask for help. And, you know, I've done that where I've actually sat my husband down and said, so by the way, I feel terrible. I'm miserable. Here's why. And once I'd explained it to him and I'd told him what I wanted, total support.
Yeah, amazing.
So I've often spoken to mothers who said, I hope he does this for me. And I hope that, and I just say, why are you hoping? Why don't you just tell? Because of the culture we're in. So, you know, you'll get the other parent, man, wandering around doing his thing. He thinks he's being helpful or supportive, but you just got to tell him.
Yeah. Or if that's not possible, or if you're on your own, or you know, you have different circumstances, or, you know, you're single sex parents, you know, whatever, there's so many different combinations of ways to have a family. Find your tribe, you know. I mean, when women work and are supportive, you know, we are amazing.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it can be the most amazing supportive community. And it's the, you know, the classic, when you're with a group of women or another woman, you know, how do you feel afterwards? Do you feel supported? Do you feel connected? Do you feel loved?
I love that.
No, I feel judged and I feel a bit rubbish. Well, then stop hanging out.
Yeah, find a new tribe.
Yeah.
There will be some cheerleaders
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
Yes. And that's kind of like letting go of expectations as well. Yeah. It's just, you know, you're in a group, they're saying this about you. Yeah. Well, you know, if that's unreasonable and you can't change that, that's not the right group.
Usually when we're really judgy about other people, it's based on fear. And that's not nice.
And remember who you are beyond motherhood, because we very easily get sucked into this. It's like a complete life change when you go into being a parent. And it really was for me. It was quite a car crash. And then, you know, there's life before and then there's life afterwards. And you were much better at parenting before than you are afterwards. And you when you get into this motherhood, very often this mum guilt puts you down a track where your life is all about making sure these children are just as good as they can possibly be, because you feel like that's your job. And then they're teenagers and they're suddenly off doing their own thing and they're not really agreeing with you and they actually don't want you to hug them. So you're getting all the hard bits of parenting and none of the feedback and none of the love. And you think, what's happened?
And your whole identity is wrapped up in being a mother and being a good mother. And, you know, it feels really nice when they're connected and little and you can, you know, it's more controlling, isn't it? And then suddenly they don't want to be controlled anymore. And then it's like, well, what do I do all day? And it's the, you know,
it was my job now.
Yeah, it's the kind of the classic.
What can I feel
when
guilty
you're
about?
What are you and your teenager? When you get teenagers, it's a part-time job and full-time availability. So we have to go out and get a life.
Yes, absolutely.
But be available.
Whenever they call, obviously, put everything down. No, and practicing gratitude often. This is you come big on this, and it's changed my life from when I was young and taught this. So how would people do this?
Yeah, I mean, gratitude is a game changer. And I love that you were taught so early. I think it's beautiful. But when we practice gratitude, it releases the same chemicals in our brain that are in antidepressants.
So Free drugs, guys.
It's not just a woo-woo weird thing. It really is important. And it balances our negative bias that we all have. It's a rebalancing thing.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. Of course, we always look out on the horizon for the damaging things.
The thing that's going to kill us, because we're still in survival mode otherwise when we get stressed, because our brains are still wired as if we lived in caves. So gratitude also rebalances that. So what we can do is really simple. It's really easy. There's lots of ways of doing it, but the most simple way is, you know, I don't know, when you're going to bed or around the dinner table or in the morning, when you just take a moment, think of three things you're grateful for, or one if there's only one, and then just sit with it for a moment. Feel where do you, if you're doing it in a mindful way, you know, I teach it that you think of the thing and then you think about the thing, and then you feel, well, where does that show up in your body? And it probably will somehow. It can be like a warm, fuzzy feeling or a tingling or an impulse or something. And it might not show up immediately, but it usually does if you practice it for a while. And then just sit with it for a moment and then move on. And you can write it down. Some people like to have a gratitude journal. I just think of it. And that can be enough. And there's always something. I mean,
always
something. And it could just be, you know, even if you've had the worst day ever, you know, there's something to be grateful for. The sun is setting now, or I have water in my tap, or I have hair on my head, or, you know, something really, really simple. And then you sit with it and then actually it feels a bit better.
It's brilliant. And it certainly has changed my life.
And also with the, you know, teenagers, when they're struggling, when there's something up, and there will be something because that's life.
Do the same thing.
Think about them, okay, they're really struggling at the moment. But I don't know, it could be really basic, like, you know, they have two legs. they can see, you know, just something really, and it does shift.
They haven't got a spider tattoo on their face. there you are, right. Identify the sources of guilt.
Yeah.
I've done this. Mm-hmm. I actually was feeling utterly miserable and thought, why am I feeling, I have the most amazing, I'm so fortunate, I have a wonderful husband, I have children who are healthy and all this stuff. And then I realized, and it was one thing, and I just decided that had to stop. And it was, the process was actually recognizing what that was. And then I then had a conversation with everyone in my immediate family and said, so here's what I'm doing. And here's why.
Yeah.
And it's just to protect myself, and everything else stays the same.
Yeah, amazing.
And by explaining it clearly, I helped everybody to embrace it.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, I understand that. Yeah. No problem. And then everybody just, that's a new paradigm. Yeah. And my life is so much better.
That's amazing. And that's, again, back to the old chestnut of awareness, isn't it? If we're aware, you know, maybe we don't even know what guilt feels like. So it's just sort of stopping and noticing, okay, all our feelings, all our emotions, and what does guilt feel like, so that when it shows up, we notice it. And then it's only then we can go, okay, what's the source of it? It's like a little journey we have to go on. But if we're not aware, if we don't have any awareness, then it's hard to begin.
Sometimes you just need to talk to a doctor or get some proper advice from someone who really knows how to help.
Yeah, and often the source
get you unstuck.
The source is feelings, and I think particularly for women, of this sort of underlying feeling of not being good enough,
and overwhelmed by that.
Yeah, if I'm not good enough, then you're kind of constantly looking out for signs that you're not good enough.
And yes, it's the negative bias.
Yeah, you have the, you know, what we look for, we find. That can be hard if it's
very
tied up with shame, because then it's taboo, isn't it? So shame doesn't survive if we talk about it. Shame doesn't survive if we talk about it in a safe space, then it dissolves.
Interesting.
If we keep it in secret, it festers.
Yes. Oh, I like that. Have you been experiencing mum guilt? Perhaps just being a bit less judgmental of each other would benefit us all. I don't know. The most useful thing I've learned recently is to use this curious thinking rather than judgmental thoughts. Yeah. You know, we talked about that in one of our previous episodes, where you know, as we become adults, we only notice things because we see a problem. So we try and fix the problem.
Yes.
And the curious thinking is, okay, I'm feeling something. What do I think about this? And not trying to judge it or, you know, make decisions about it, because often we're coloured by our culture. Yeah.
Absolutely changes the tone. I love also the, I try and remind myself of, you know, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Most of what we do is good enough.
Yes.
And we have this stupid perfect bar that we're not even aware of sometimes. It's just taken, you know, as a normal, we need to be this amazing as a mother, but actually nobody is.
I've had that conversation just the other week with a mother where she was saying, you know, and you want your child to go to the best school. And I said, sorry, what is the best school? And she said, well, I'd say, and I said, no, I mean, seriously, let's unpack this. Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And this is the problem, because there's this sense that something's best.
Yeah.
Something's And it's not. No. It's not. We're human beings. What's good for one person may not be good for another. It's so complicated.
And underlying that is this idea that there is a perfect. And if we go for perfect, then that must be good enough. Because that is perfect.
Absolutely.
It doesn't exist.
Absolutely. We loved this suggestion about talking about mum guilt. It hadn't really occurred to me. And it's been quite a revelation, hasn't it?
It's blown
my
mind.
So do you keep your questions coming? Our email is help@teenagersuntangled.com. You can also reach us via our Facebook group or Instagram. We read everything. Now, helping your teen navigate friendship groups is one of our most popular downloads. You know, we talked about them earlier on. So this is a really big one for us.
Yeah.
And of course, we're aware that we can't control who they make friends with as they get older, but you may still be worried about them getting into trouble or taking stupid risks. And it can be a bit of a tightrope between respecting their independence and wanting to make sure you're there to give them the good guidance. So, well, given that we can't choose our teens' friends, and we will sometimes get a gut reaction and think, oh, I'm not sure about this person, what do we do?
I think as in lots and lots of issues, it really depends on your relationship with your child.
Yeah.
Like if you have a good relationship and you're used to discussing things, then they might be open. And the way you say it as well, you know, like, I've noticed your friend, blah, blah, blah. What do you think about them? What do you like about them? Why do you like hanging out with them? And have a conversation. And you can just drop in, you know, I've noticed that. What do you think? So that it's a dialogue. Whereas if you have a relationship that isn't open and the connection isn't there at the moment, it might be temporary, then they might just go, well, stuff you, I'm going to be best friends with them now.
Yes, but that's the problem. As soon as you flagged up that you don't like that person, that's, you know, there are certain teens that will deliberately target that relationship because they want to make a point. So this does happen. I love your point about asking. I mean, you know, rather than going, oh, I don't like this person, don't say that. Don't say it. Don't go there. Barbara Greenberg, PhD in psychology, talking in psychology today, says, find out why your teen likes the friend they don't like. And you might find out something very interesting and surprising.
Yeah.
So you may be thinking, because you're seeing a signal that is just misleading you. Yeah. So don't sit and judge before you've ask those questions. And it may be that this person understands your teenager in a way that other people don't. We all have different friends for different things.
Or maybe that person is triggering you.
Maybe the person
like maybe they remind you of someone that you don't like. We need to be really aware of why we don't like people.
So what is it? Really good point. So also think, before you even have that conversation, think, okay, what is it? Try and pinpoint, what is it about this person that's making me feel my flags go up? What's going on here? And, you know, I mean, I've read kids who say, I made friends with this kid who really wasn't the right person for me to be friends with, but I was the boring kid and they were really cool and it just made me feel good and to be their friend. And, you know, it can be, at teen years, friendships actually can change quite rapidly. So you may find that they're friends for a while and then it just, you know, so rather than panicking, having that sit down chat, but also stop talking and listen to them.
And also set boundaries. If they're, you know, they're doing something that, or declare your boundaries maybe is a better way. You know, if they're doing something that you really feel is dangerous or, you know, a bad thing, then you can say, you know, I really don't want you doing that. Or I really think that's a bad idea. Problem. Please, you know, don't do that.
Well, I think the point with that is not to target the person who's their friend. It's to target the behavior. So the thing to do is pick out and say, so I've noticed that they are vaping. You know, it's something I really don't want you to do. And the more time you spend with them, the harder it's going to be for you to not vape. So the question is, how do we manage this?
Have a conversation about it. Is that something you want to try, you know, and you know, maybe if they're honest, I don't know. Or are you cool with, you know, being with them and not doing it? And then if they feel tempted, you can help them with give them ideas.
And don't just assume that the other friend's the bad influence, because, you know, it might be your kid who's going, hey, because they might have seen this person who enables them to behave a way that they would like to behave, because they give them the courage.
And they're experimenting. But we, of course, we don't want them, you know, doing stuff that is dangerous, of course.
Yes. And so the technique for doing it is to, first of all, make sure you don't talk about the person, you focus on the behaviour that's important. Don't contradict them or jump down their throat. If they say, this person such and such, don't instantly jump in there and think, I know they're not, or they're... Give your teenager time to talk about it.
Yeah.
And when to talk is really not a good idea to talk about this in the heat of a moment, an argument, any of... Just find a moment, the car.
The car, the sacred car. And also make them welcome. I mean, obviously that's different for different people, but personally, I hope that my kids feel that all their friends are welcome.
I always think about you, in that respect. That's such an important thing.
Yeah.
Make your house the fun place.
Yeah.
Get the things that they can do, get the crisps or the whatever, and just say, hi, guys, come around. Because when they're here, you can then... It's not even about just monitoring them closely. You can just get a sense of the interactions and you can see, and then you can help point out to them, the friend said this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they really get you or they're actually leading you in the right way. Yeah. You can drop little nuggets in at times, but if they're all around your house, at least you know where they are.
Yeah, and maybe if the particular kid who is struggling with something, you give them a space where they feel they can... feel welcome, that could really help them, and they might really benefit from that.
Yes. I was that person. I'm gonna stop you right there. I was that person. So I was called a gutter snipe by a woman who lived down our road because I was basically out all day, every day, wouldn't get called in by my parents. I literally just, was out. And that's because nobody really cared where I was or what I was doing. And I got to the age of 16 and thought, I'm moving away. I found a course I'm going to go on. And there was a hiatus. So between the age of 16, when I'd left school, and starting this course, I had an entire summer with nothing to do and no friends. Mm. What am I supposed to do with my time? So I looked around me and thought, I was living in this small village, and I thought, okay, well, I just will just make friends with the teenagers who are in the village. I've ignored them until now. How bad can it be? Pretty bad. And they were smokers, drinkers, you name it. They weren't shooting drugs, but they were, it was close to that. Mm. And they were playing chicken in their cars and... But, I hung out with them because I thought, what am I supposed to do? Sit at home feeling lonely. And I think my parents didn't even know where I was. Mm. But it all came to a crashing end when my parents had to pick me up from a hospital in the middle, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was covered in blood because one of the boys had been shot and I'd rescued him and everyone else had run home and gone to bed.
It's a horrific story.
Yeah, and I just thought... maybe those aren't the people, because the police even said, they can't even string a sentence together. The other people. Yeah. I was the only person who could actually give evidence properly. And, the point is, I wasn't a bad person. No. I wasn't a smoker. I wasn't a drinker. I wasn't having sex. I wasn't doing drugs, anything. Mm. I was just lonely and bored.
Yeah.
So the question is, what is actually driving your teen to make friends with people that you think perhaps they shouldn't be friends with?
Yeah. Yeah.
And ask the questions. And if that other mother down the street, and rather than saying she's a gutter snipe, had said, hey, do you want to come around?
Yes.
She might have, hi.
Yeah, and it might be really life-changing. It might not be, we have to make the boundaries that we need, don't we? Mm-hmm. But, invite them around, see what they're like before
you make a judgment.
Yeah.
And avoid doing anything sneaky to try and find out what's going on. I see lots of parents saying, oh, I'm going to go and look in their phone. Can we actually start being honest with our teens?
Yeah.
And if you're going to look through their phone, it needs to be a discussion. Say, I feel very concerned about your phone use and I need to be able to have access to it. If you can't agree to that, we need to withdraw the phone rather than sneaking around the back, looking under their beds. And this is a real invasion of privacy, in my opinion.
I wouldn't do that.
Because once they know, because the problem is, if you find something, now you're confronted with it. What do I talk to them about? Tell them I've just been sneaking around?
It's much better to have a conversation.
All the trust.
Yeah. And they might not answer you immediately, but leave it as an open, not as an ultimatum, but as a I've noticed this, can we talk about it? You don't have to answer me now, but maybe tomorrow or when you feel ready, can we talk about this thing? And then it's just less of a ultimatum.
Yes, absolutely. And they're not going to pull down the drawbridge on you.
Yeah.
And don't forget that your teen may be appearing as an unpleasant person in someone else's house. You just don't know. So it's never a bad thing to contact other parents if you can. And just say, hi, you know, I know our teens are hanging out together. Yeah. How's it going?
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, you know, if you notice what they're doing. And actually being honest with them about where your boundaries are. So you can say, so I really, you know, rather my teen didn't drink. So at least the other parents know where you're at with this. Yeah. And they may disagree. They may say, well, we think it's fine.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, but just so you know, this is where I'm at, and I feel very uncomfortable.
That's a really good idea. I think that's quite straightforward when you, like, I was just thinking of my kids' friends. Like, I know a lot of them really well because they've been friends with them for years. And, you know, when your kids are younger, you know the parents really well. Whereas some of the more recent friends and maybe the older friends, I mean, the older in age, I have no idea who they are. So contacting parents would be tricky, I guess. But I like the idea.
And that's common. I mean, you know, I've just been speaking to one of our my daughter's friends, and she said, well, my parents don't know any of my friends.
No, you don't know
their parents.
No, so to,
but I mean, it is that is one of those things where rather than kind of panicking about it, it's there's never a, because you may, it may put everything in context.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you meet the parents, you may go, oh, okay, I can see why they're behaving this way. And, you know, just get as much information as you can before you make decisions. And, you know, understand that your teen is trying to build their social circle. This may be a transient phase. So my daughter fell in with the wrong crowd when she first went to her new school. It was a phase. We talked about it and I said, you might want some other friends. And actually straight away she moved on. And rather than panicking about it, because I think if I'd catastrophized it, it would have turned it into something very different.
Yes. And we can use those things to sort of teach our kids boundaries. You know, what do you do when you're with somebody who is maybe not treating you very well? Okay, well, there are options. You know, it's a really great learning platform. Yeah. I've role played with my daughter.
Oh, I love that. Really?
Not recently, but in earlier. And she remembers it. She remembers how to say no to somebody.
Yes.
What do you do?
Really, so yeah, so that's a really interesting point. So if you know that, for example, coming back to the vaping, these kids are vaping, and you're saying, well, I know that if you spend more time with them, you're going to be doing this, actually just role playing, how would I get out of these situations? Yes, I know it sounds fun, but you know, you can talk. I mean, with my kids with drugs, for example, I've said to them, we have mental health problems in our family, and any drugs you take could tip your brain over and you can't get it back. So just so you realize that this is not really something to experiment with. I'm sure everybody listening, if you search far enough back in your family history, you'll find mental health problems where, you know, that because these can be triggered by certain drugs. So for my kids, it's a no-go area.
I think I told one of my kids the other day that they, you know, if you don't want to do something, there was an issue with friends, of, you know, boundaries, as various things, just, you know, you can use me if you want, you know, just say,
exactly,
my mum won't let me, I don't mind, you know, give them options as to what they can do when they're in that situation with somebody who's maybe not respectful of their boundaries.
Now, if you know that the friend is taking drugs or truanting or showing up in police records, then once again, focus on the behavior as the problem. Tell your teen that you have a zero tolerance policy, because experimenting with drug taking stops you learning adult coping strategies for dealing with life. I mean, reinforce structure and boundaries. I would use the technique I talked about right at the start of the episode. Tell your teen that it's a privilege to go out, not a right. And so is their phone. Apologize for thinking that they were ready for the responsibility, and say that you're going to rein them in until you can see that they're coping better and making better choices.
And again, trying to connect with it, you know, have a conversation, open questions. What do you think about it? Who is this person? Why do you want to hang out? Rather than, right, you're forbidden from seeing them ever again. Because that's just disconnect and they'll just rebel.
And I love that, because you're coming back to what you always say, which is that, you know, they do know. They do know. So if you actually try and reach into them and say, so what do you, you know, genuinely, what do you think? I mean, you're an adult, you know, or you're a growing adult, you've got a brain. How do you feel about this? Because I think very often if I was asked that, it did engage my thinking brain.
Yes.
And then it makes me more inquisitive about the way that people are treating me. And then it makes me more choosy.
Yeah. And the way you talk to your teen is the way they respond. I think I read something a while back, you know, if you talk to the young part of their brain then you'll get the young bit back. If you talk to the wise part, the mature part of their brain, you'll get the mature part back. You
know? I like that.
It's really, really immediate, actually.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it's a really good tip there. So think about that when you're engaging. Yeah. Think, what am I, you know, which bit of the brain am I talking to? Yeah, I like that. And also building up their self-esteem. Quite often, our teens get led down an alleyway because they're just not feeling great about themselves.
Yes, often it's the
case. And rather than turning on the criticism, turning on the, you know, I see you do this so well, and showing them how nice it feels, because very often they're in with these kids because these kids are making them feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
Somehow.
That's such a good point. That's a really good point. How can we give them that in a different way?
And while it's possible that your teenager could be in with the wrong crowd, they could also be trying to navigate a mental health issue.
Yeah.
So rather than fixating on that, you could also look at, okay, what's going on, you know, literally with my teenager. Is there other stuff happening underneath this that's making them...
Are they trying to escape from something? Are they trying to get...
Exactly.
Rush,
has something
risks?
Happened?
Yeah.
Is there something happened to them that we're not aware of? Yeah. You know, if I start asking questions, is this going to open something else up that I can help with?
Yeah. Or are they struggling with school and you don't know about it, so they're bunking off because it feels rubbish to be there? You know, it could be loads of million reasons as to why they're acting out.
Yes, absolutely. Does the hair on the back of your neck bristle when you think of your teen's troublemaker friends, or are they upstairs hanging out together because, well, it's better to have them in your own home? Do you have any tips for us? Message us on Facebook, Instagram, or help@teenagersuntangled.com. In our next episode, let's stay with this theme we've been discussing and look in more depth at how we should deal with the issue of drug use. Also, how to cope with the other divorced parent. Is your teen threatening to go and live with them because they have fewer rules? Well, we'll research the experts and talk about the experiences we know about. That's it for now. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. Review us so that other people can find us more easily. Tell your friends and send us any questions that you have. We're on Instagram or Facebook, and Susie has her own website, which is susieasleymindfulness.co.uk. All the links are on our podcast notes. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye-bye for now.